Wayne and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Well, good morning, guys. It's, post-Christmas, pre-New Year's Day, so we're in that space. How was your holiday? Not everybody all at once.
I was positive for Paul.
Was waiting for me.
As it should be, I should
be able to go first. I get it. Everyone fell in line. I'm kidding. Holiday was good, man. Holiday was good. You know, we are out in Virginia right now, visiting with family and friends. Santa was very good. He found me here in Virginia, so he treated me very well. So it was good. It's been nice. I'm on a big, obviously, you know, horror. I'm on a big Stephen King kick lately. For some reason, probably because of the Welcome to Derry show. So I got It, the book, which I did not realize was 1,200 pages. So that's going to take me about 6 months to finish. I got a Pennywise hoodie. Ooh. Yeah, a bunch of good stuff.
So, Paul, I am curious about the show you mentioned, but I will say that my holiday, the stuff I got was good, but it did not start out very well. Because on the drive to my family, something came flying off of a diesel in front of me and took out my tire.
Oh no.
So I'm on the highway going 70 and my tire gets punctured and I end up waiting on the side of the highway for over 2 hours.
Jesus.
Did eventually get the tire replaced and got back on the road, but it meant that I spent a lot of time in the car on that day, and it's kind of draining.
That sounds awful, but I'm glad you weren't hurt.
Yeah, no, it was pretty awful, but I was able to get the car off the side of the road without losing control, and then I just sat on the side of the road, shaking as every vehicle went by for over 2 hours. The insurance is horrible. They picked a tow truck service that was pretty far away from where I actually was.
Ooh.
They picked a place to get the tire replaced that went out of business over a year ago. Thankfully, I called ahead and realized that they weren't in business. So I was able to call around, find somewhere that had my tire size while I was sitting there waiting, and got it all sorted out. So when the truck showed up, he was able to take me somewhere where I had a tire waiting and they were already prepared. But yeah, no, that was a horrible way to start the holiday.
Yeah, well, no
so
doubt.
Was this Christmas Eve or what was this Christmas Day?
Yeah, my family did it on the 23rd. So
okay, all right.
So at least stuff was open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been a lot worse if it would have been on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
Well, mine was not as bad as Wayne's. I did do some driving up to the in-laws and back, but thankfully I did not have any traffic-related issues. And Santa found me up there, up in the frozen north, and brought me lots of good toys to play with for the next year, including, I guess, relevant to this show, the Volume 3 of the Lazarus hardbacks.
Nice.
That I've slowly been picking up and reading through.
I couldn't tell in your picture that you shared. I couldn't tell if that was the Lazarus role-playing game or the Lazarus trade paperback. So
yeah, it's the hardbacks. It's the nice hardbacks. But yeah, it was the third one of that. So I just need to pick up one more and I'll be caught up.
That's great.
But yeah. And then also picked up some Transformers trades to help get me caught up on Transformers. So
That's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, so it was a good Christmas for my end.
Good deal.
How about you, Aaron?
Well, I got my my desired Warlord omnibus. It's glorious.
How many pages?
I don't know, but it's huge. I mean, it is it is gigormous. I think Andrew will appreciate this because he's a fellow coffeeman, but I got a milk frother.
Ooh.
You know, an electric
is coffeeman an official title? Like,
yeah,
it is.
Is that a word? That's a new word for me. Coffeeman.
Yeah, he's a coffeeman.
You have to be an apprentice first, and then you become a coffeeman, and then you become a master brewer. That's the progression, Paul.
That's right. That's right.
Andrew Coffeeman. That's your new title.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's an electric milk frother. It steams. It does all the things. And I have been making exquisite coffee ever since Christmas morning. It's really quite the thing. In fact,
I have some sort of espresso producing machine as well.
I do. And I had three giant cups of coffee, you know, before logging in this morning to chat with you guys. So, you know, I'm a little jittery. Blood pressure is not a real thing, Andrew. I don't know if they told you that. It's not really a thing. It's just a scam.
Okay.
And I also got an electric. I got a power sander, which I'm also very excited about. But I think the only nerd thing I got was my Warlord Omnibus.
That's the only nerd thing you need, really.
I'm actually very excited about all the things that I received, but I'm really excited about my Warlord Omnibus. I've not cracked it open to read it yet, but because there has been zero time for reading, other than the host of comic books I got caught up on for today.
You've been too busy power sanding. Is that what's happening?
That's right. Well, no, I mean, you know, we've been watching movies here at the house. We went out to go see a movie.
Did you see?
We saw yesterday, and this is outside of our nerd conversation, except it does apply to my specific nerd, Song Sung Blue, which, guys, best movie I've seen in 2025. And that wow. I saw Sinners this week. I saw Weapons this week, both of which are fantastic. I got to say, Song Sung Blue, best movie of 2025.
I've been seeing the trailers for it.
It is fantastic. Highly recommend.
I saw a movie too, Aaron.
Would you see, Paul? Did you see Song Sung Blue?
I did not, even though I feel like I probably could have seen it twice for the amount of time I spent in the movie theater. I actually saw Avatar, Fire and Ash, last night.
And how long was Avatar?
It is 3 hours and 17 minutes without trailers.
Wow. That is insane.
And thankfully, I did not see it at a large movie chain like AMC or Regal. So it's not like there were 30 minutes of trailers. There were about four or five, including the new Avengers teaser trailer. You know, because I waited a week. So like the first week they had when Avatar came out. So apparently the rumors are true. Every week is going to have a new teaser attached to Avatar. So the first week, it was all about Steve Rogers. This week's teaser trailer was all about Thor. And then the rumor is that next week's trailer will be all about the X-Men. And then the fourth week trailer will be all about the Fantastic Four. So okay. I got so to see the Thor teaser trailer.
The Steve Rogers one is on YouTube now. They've finally released it. So yeah, I'm guessing the Thor one. Yeah. The Thor one should be released soon. So I'm curious what's in the Thor one, because the Captain America one is a whole lot of nothing.
Same with the Thor one. Honestly, it's basically Thor, you know, praying to the gods to return home safely to his daughter. It's, you know, 30 seconds, give or take, just like the Steve Rogers one. It's fine. You know, I mean, it's not, for what it's worth, it's not inspiring excitement, because it, much like the Steve Rogers one, it's just kind of a quiet moment. But I mean, you know, we're a year away, so I'm sure there's not much finished footage from that movie.
It is interesting though that they now have they've made Steve Rogers, Tony, and Thor all parents.
Yeah, fair point.
And that seems to be a focus of these teasers.
They're going to set up the next generation. I think that's what we're going to see. But yeah, I mean, that was a minute of, you know, a 4 hour movie experience. Cause like I said, I went and saw Avatar Fire and Ash, which, I mean, you know, for what it's worth, much like all the Avatars, like I saw it, it's a visual spectacle. At this point, it feels like the third episode in a TV show, in that it's so similar to the first two. It is basically the same movie as part two, except this one is about fire instead of water.
I never saw part two. After the first, I had no desire to see any more of those movies.
I will tell you, I did not like the first Avatar, but I felt like I was the only one in the world. So I went and saw part two anyway. And, you know, much like part two, you know, part three is very much, you know, the first two. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it's all visual spectacle. It's beautiful, technically marvelous, you know, saw it in 3D, very cool. Both of them, James Cameron knows how to end a film. You know, both have very spectacular, rousing, exciting endings. You know, obviously they drag a little bit in the middle. You could probably remove 30 to 45 minutes from all of them. I'm glad I saw it. I'm glad I saw it on the big screen. I would, even though I've seen all three movies, I would not call myself an Avatar fan, but I appreciate the movies. So I'm glad I saw it. I mean, it's pretty, you know, pretty marvelous, like, you know, on the big screen to see, you know, a film like that. There's just not much to it, you know, from a story perspective. And then, you know, randomly, you know, now again, we're three Avatars in and Giovanni Ribisi pops up on screen and you know, some other actors. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot those actors have been in this series because, you know, it's all about the blue people. And then, you know, they'll randomly pop up a real actor. And I'm like, oh yeah, he's been in all three. So it's interesting from that capacity. But I can't say rush out and see it.
Yeah, it wasn't on my list to rush out to see, but I'm glad that you kind of confirmed my thoughts on it.
There's a bunch of movies I want to see right now, but I've kind of missed the boat, I think, on some of them. Like, I want to see Wicked Part 2.
That was good. It was good.
But I don't think it's in theaters anymore. I think I've missed out on my chance.
I wanted to see Ella McKay when it came out. Probably James Brooks's last film. And for those of you who don't know, James Brooks did movies like, you know, Broadcast News. I want to say Starting Over, you know, he huge film career through the 70s, 80s and 90s. And was really interested in seeing it, had gotten some good write-ups. And it was in theaters literally a week, you know, because films like Avatar and other genres films have just squeezed out the available theaters.
I can say, Aaron, all the movies you want to see or have seen are ones I hadn't even heard of. Yeah. I've never heard of Song Sung Blue. I don't know what that is.
It's fantastic.
It's the Neil Diamond movie that's out
I didn't know there was a Neil Diamond movie out now.
It's the story of a guy who is essentially a Neil Diamond impersonator, though that's not how he characterizes himself. And, you know, the band that he puts together, and it's just a fantastic movie. It's got Hugh Jackman in it and Kate Hudson and a bunch of other people. Jim Belushi's in it, and he's fantastic. Fisher Stevens, who I hadn't thought of in years, is in it. I mean, it's just really, really well acted, produced, written, the whole bit. It's just a great film.
Well, I've not made it to the movie theater, but the other night I had a few minutes while I was wrapping gifts, and I watched two movies new to me on streaming, which was Baby Driver and Tenet, which I had never seen before.
I couldn't get through Tenet because I couldn't hear anything. The dialogue was so muffled. And
you didn't click on the subtitles, the closed captioning?
I don't like to closed caption.
Yeah, I didn't have to turn on the closed captioning for this one, but it is hard to understand them in places without it out.
I got so frustrated that I turned it off and haven't gone back to it. And that was over a year ago. I did watch a Christopher Nolan movie this weekend, though. I rewatched The Prestige, I deeply love that movie. I introduced my wife to The Survivors last night with the Walter Matthau, Robin Williams movie from 1984, I want to say.
Yeah.
And she had never seen it, and she loved it. I love that movie. What kind of man gives cigarettes to trees? honky mofo. I love that movie. I haven't seen that movie in probably 20 years, and I quote it all the time. Honky mofo is one of my favorite references.
one of the things I appreciate about Aaron is that he likes film. You notice we're all talking about Baby Driver, Avatar, and Aaron's like, I saw a nice independent movie from 1984 starring Walter Matthau
independent and
Robin
movie.
Williams.
It was a Universal motion picture.
It was. Like, you know my point. Yeah. Aaron likes cinema.
We also watched, you know, along those lines, watched Bad News Bears on Christmas Day.
That's a classic. Yeah.
The original with Walter Matthau and Tatum O'Neill, not the horseshit retread with Billy Bob, who I love Billy Bob, but I just can't imagine that they'd remake that movie. Because, I mean, they win the game. The Little League team wins the big game, you know, the penultimate game, not the – and, you know, he gives out beer. He gives out beer to the kids. I love it. I love it. Here you go. Here's your beer. Yeah, love that movie. But I also, like I said, I watched Sinners and Weapons this week. And
both great movies.
Those are both fantastic movies. I really cannot say enough how much I think Sinners is real and true cinema. And I mean, from my perspective, I haven't seen all the contender movies yet that will be nominated for the Oscars, that I assume, like, you know, Marty Supreme came out this week. Haven't seen that yet. But oh my gosh, I mean, Sinners is a motion picture. That is, I mean, it is directed, written, produced, acted. I mean, it seems like there are Oscars all over that film.
Oh, for sure. Especially sound design and music. Like, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
You know, original score.
It is amazing. It is amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're watching all these movies, and the only thing I've watched is finishing up season 3 of Is It Cake, and then getting a random, I want to see it again, and going back and watching the first episode of the Highlander TV show.
Oh, wow.
That is random. I'm sorry.
Oh, dear. I loved that show back in the day.
I loved it too, but that first season's rough. Like it a lot is. Of stuff yeah. back then.
Oh yeah, and that first episode especially is very rough.
Yeah, you gotta get past any of those syndicated TV shows.
Yikes. Well, okay, so Paul,
yes,
you went and saw Avatar, and I'm worried because, you know, that 3 hours 17 minutes, you know, for Avatar. Trailer. Did you have time to read some comic books this week?
I did, actually. I got caught up on my absolute comic books because I was a couple of issues behind on Superman and Wonder Woman.
I was 3 issues behind on Superman and 4 issues behind on Wonder Woman, and I got caught up for today's podcast.
Wow. And I
that's my level
you,
of dedication.
That yes, is dedicated. Same. I was about the same. I'm glad I got caught up though, because I actually really liked both books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like Superman had a bit of a rough start in the there was the first arc, which was strong. Then they had a second arc, which was not good. But this final arc, the Battle of Smallville, I actually really liked it. And I liked that it finally set up a Superman character that feels familiar to us. Mm-hmm. You know, you finally get like the hope and the, you know, the inspirational aspects of Superman. He's still, you know, he's still absolute Superman. He's still not your regular DCU Superman, but we start to get a little bit more towards the Superman that we know, and the Lois Lane and the Jimmy Olsen that we know. And I actually really liked this, this final arc. What about you, Aaron?
I did too. And, you know, speaking of both books at the same time, both Superman and Wonder Woman, you know, Superman is on issue 4. Wonder Woman's on issue 15 currently. Looking back, you know, at everything all the way back to issue 1 of both series, the thing I notice is that Superman seems to be telling a more linear story, you know, really driving hard towards what happened in issue 14, whereas Wonder Woman has had various arcs, right? I mean, there are certainly arcs within the Absolute Superman book, but they are not, they're more like chapters in this ongoing story. Whereas Wonder Woman has had just very distinct adventures. You know, we had the, you know, the opening story with her and the kaiju. We had the story of her in the maze, the story with her and her doppelganger. And, you know, then we had, you know, the most recent issue with the Batman, the Absolute Batman. And I find it really interesting in the different tacks that the writers are taking in, you know, telling these absolute versions of our heroes. I got to tell you, the reason why I was delayed in reading Absolute Superman was that I was getting frustrated with the pacing of the story, and reading these last 3 issues back to back really helped. I got excited in the battle for Kansas. I got really excited when, you know, it became clear that Smallville stands with Superman, because that was not apparent earlier on. I like that Lois and Jimmy are really emerging as, you know, they're not allies of the Omega Men. They're not allies of Lazarus. They are allies of Superman. And, you know, also, that's not been apparent throughout the books. I love that, you know, our big bad in the Superman books is not Lex Luthor. It's not even Brainiac. You know, the big boss villain is Ra's al Ghul. And I think it's great in this absolute world that we're kind of shifting some of the villains, you know, because, you know, you have every superhero has their own sort of rogues gallery, and they don't usually cross over much. So I love seeing Ra's al Ghul, who looks more like Vandal Savage than Ra's al Ghul that we're familiar with. But Ra's al Ghul emerges as the big bad in the Superman books, and he's trying to make Superman his son. And when he names him Kal-El Ghul, oh my God, that was a fantastic moment. Kal-El Ghul, how have we not had that for decades? I really enjoyed the Superman book.
I agree. And I actually did have an issue with Ra's al Ghul being the main villain of the first arc, but I feel like this most recent arc definitely explained and made it more clear why they chose him versus Vandal Savage versus Lex Luthor. And I really, truly enjoyed it. I think it's a great book. It wrapped up very strongly, you know, like I was saying with Avatar, like a big rousing, you know, battle at the end where everything looks bleak and then, you know, Superman turns it around. It's really, really strong. And as strong as Absolute Superman was, I think Wonder Woman is just an amazing comic book.
Completely agree.
This latest issue of Wonder Woman, and don't get me wrong, I actually really like Absolute Batman, but this latest issue of Wonder Woman is probably the best issue of Absolute Batman without actually being an issue of that book. I thought it was both characters. It establishes a relationship between these characters. You know, this is the first meeting between Absolute characters, and I feel like Absolute Wonder Woman number 15 is probably as perfect a comic book as DC produced this year, and they had a strong year. But this issue, the art, the story, the character interactions, I loved everything about this comic book.
Yeah, I can't do anything but agree here. I am not a fan of the Absolute Batman book. I was a huge fan of the Batman that appeared in this book. I loved the way Diana spoke to him. I loved how curt he is with her. You know, that, you know, and he's just giving her sort of one word answers and directives. You know, he's directing her to explain things, and he asks her to explain magic. You know, I loved how you could figure out the answer to the problem yourself based on the information that's provided at the beginning of the book. Them using the bad guys using Wonder Woman's origins against her, that, you know, we understand she's made of clay. Well, if she's made of clay, she's a homunculus of some kind. We can use that. We can take control of the creature. I love that story. That is so creative. That is so outside, you know, what we have seen in other iterations of the Wonder Woman character. I've not ever seen that story before. And the fact that you can have a character that's been around for 70 years, 80 years, and there's a story we've not seen, that there's a trick they played on the character that we've not seen. I think that's amazing. The artwork in this book is beautiful. The writing is beautiful. I loved everything about this book. And again, I loved the depiction of Absolute Batman in this book. I really strongly encourage folks to read both the Superman, the Absolute Superman and Absolute Wonder Woman books. I think they're terrific. I think Absolute Wonder Woman has some unevenness in the stories as well as the Superman book. But overall, you know, when you read them as a whole, they are just fantastic. And I cannot imagine collecting the Superman book in particular without it being a massive omnibus edition. I mean, I feel like in order to tell the story in a compelling manner, you've got to collect all 14 of those issues together. I don't think you can just read them, you know, in 4 and 6 book chunks. I think you need the whole thing, you know, beginning to end. Whereas I think the Wonder Woman books can be broken up into smaller bite-sized pieces.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd say my only issue with this Absolute line, and don't get me wrong, I probably just need to get caught up on these books because I've only really read the first issue of any of them, and even then, some not even that on some of them, is just how far the quality difference is between the top the Trinity books and the other Absolute books. Like sometimes I forget that Absolute Green Lantern and Absolute Flash even exist.
Yeah, because I gave them the first issue, and I didn't go any further than that on either one of those. For some reason, I lost interest in these, and maybe I need to go back and reread them because it might be a pacing thing. But Superman, I dropped off around issue 10, Wonder Woman around issue 5, and Batman, I got to issue 7.
I recommend getting caught up. I mean, obviously, that's a lot of books to get caught up on, but I would recommend, in your case, getting caught up on Absolute Superman, because I feel like this latest arc will definitely turn it around for you. Like Aaron says, with Wonder Woman, it depends on the arc, but you know, this issue was really strong, and it's always well done. It's just sometimes the arc just doesn't land as strong.
I agree. Yep.
And Batman, I truly enjoyed Batman, but it is an acquired taste because it's a Scott Snyder book.
Right? And I think the big issue for me on the Absolute books is that everything has such a wildly different tone. And we've talked about this before, that it doesn't feel like they're all in the same universe. So that's what was so nice about seeing Wonder Woman and Batman connect in this week's book, was that, okay, yeah, they are in the same universe, you know, and they're aware of each other. Like, you know, he knew about her, she knew about him. They're talking about Superman and that maybe they need to reach out to him. You know, the Green Lantern book did not grab me. The Flash book certainly didn't. I did not care for the Flash book. Really enjoying the Martian Manhunter book, though I am an issue or two behind. But, you know, enjoying how, you know, wild and weird that book is.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first few issues of it. I'm just behind on that one. Same. But to your point, it feels so different. I don't feel like I need to read all these books to get the whole Absolute story.
And I think that's my issue, is that because they seem so, you know, separate, it's just easy not to pick them up, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I can make the decision, okay, I'll get that collected. You know, I'll read it at some point. It's not urgent reading. So, yeah.
What you understand is certainly the intention of the quote-unquote showrunner, right? Like Scott Snyder or whoever's showrunning the Absolute Universe wants creators to do their own thing,
yeah,
you know, and have their own voices. On the flip side, this is what you get versus like the Ultimate Universe when it first started in Marvel years ago, you know, where Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, they all have the Ultimates definitely felt like they were part of the same universe. This doesn't necessarily, at least not yet, but yeah. I mean, the top three books I'm enjoying for sure. And, you know, but to your point, not as interconnected as say the DC KO books that came out this past week. We got three more issues of All Fight Month. In fact, the final three issues of All Fight Month.
That is correct.
So did you guys have time to read DC KO this week with the holiday week and all those comic books and all your movie? I mean, gosh, Paul, did you even have time?
I did. But the question is, did Wayne and Andrew get caught up on Red Hood versus Joker? I read Red Hood and I read Lex Luthor. Those two are the ones I read.
It helps that Red Hood versus Joker is the only KO book I've picked up. And it's just because that was a fight I wanted to see. I haven't read anything else KO until this book.
Well,
I know we're going to go a little bit out of order because that was the last one. But I mean, oh, I was sorry. Go ahead, Andrew. You go first.
No, I picked up all three. And since I'm the only one who read round 6, which is Jay Garrick versus Guy Gardner, I'll just say real quick, I did enjoy it. There's one point at the beginning where Jay tries against Guy. Then instead of having to fight to the death, they could just play a game of checkers. And during this interaction, you learn that Guy Gardner does not know how to play checkers. And then they end up, Jay ends up, you know, breaking his nose, basically, after he calls him an old man and he doesn't know the rules to his old man games. But I enjoyed it. I think my favorite death was when Guy Gardner creates green, buzzsaw and cuts Jay directly in half. But anyway, it was a good fight. I enjoyed it. It's also where you see, Booster Gold / Darkseid begin to face off against Gorilla Grodd.
Did he take out Guy with one punch?
He did not. There was in the second round. So Guy won the first round by cutting Jay Garrick in half. The second round went to Jay as he embodied the Speed Force and basically electrocuted, overloaded Guy Gardner's red. Guy went with a red lantern form for the second round. And then the third round was a little more abstract. Jay went back to kind of like his original hero form, and Guy went for his Voldurian background and won in that one. So.
So the setup for anyone that's not reading these KO books, I'm assuming the fights are all like this, where it's best two out of three.
Yep.
Round one is a normal round. Round two and three, they choose their form, and it can be any version of themselves from past, across time. Future. Yeah. Very much video game logic.
So much so.
Yeah. And also, none of them finish in two rounds.
So far.
All of them go three rounds.
Yes. So everybody gets to, every competitor gets to win at least once.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to round seven, which was Etrigan versus Lex Luthor. Paul, you read that one.
I did indeed. Did anyone else read it other than us, Andrew?
I think it's just us.
Oh, because it was Superman issue 33.
It was.
So that's why I was, you know, for people who are picking up the Superman book, it has a little bit more forward storyline in the whole Superboy Prime thing.
Yeah, no, I've dropped all DC books while this is going on until they're done.
Yeah, I will say it is. I actually really enjoyed Lex Luthor versus Etrigan. You know, it's very much told from Lex Luthor's point of view. And, you know, of course, no one's surprised that Lex Luthor is the one who made it out of this round. But I thought there was some really well done storytelling in here. The art by Hayden Sherman, which if you're not familiar with Hayden Sherman, also the artist on Absolute Wonder Woman, very Frank Miller-esque in a good way. So I thought it was a pretty well done storyline. I like, you know, Lex Luthor employing the boom tube, or the mother box, I should say, you know, to take out Etrigan, and kind of the way he took him out at the end by taking over the form of Etrigan, I thought was really well done.
Yeah, I thought the third round was definitely my favorite out of these, and I like how it kind of called back to when Lex Luthor was in hell. And I also really enjoyed in round two when he throws that mother box at Etrigan's face. His Etrigan's only response before he dies was a loud gulp sound.
Yeah. Well, and I will say I appreciate that after round one, Etrigan took forms that weren't rhyming.
Yes.
So I was like, okay. This is good. No more rhyming.
I also loved Lex Luthor's one liner, and they're like, God, I hate rhymes. I hate rhyming so much. For someone who's I'm actively rooting against Lex Luthor because I don't want him to make it to the finals. But I did, I did very much enjoy all three fights between the demon and Lex.
I didn't know Etrigan had versions that didn't rhyme.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, he's had a few.
Yep. So
the final one, right? Round eight.
Round eight. That's the big one. That's the one everyone's been talking. That's the one they've been teased so heavily this whole time. Wayne, you read this one. What did you think of it?
So for the three fights, the first one started off really strong, I thought. And again, I picked this up because I wanted to see Jason Todd versus Joker. That's the rematch fight, the fight that really drew me in. And that first one, so it starts really strong, but then it goes off the rails. I hated the mutating Joker aspect and tossing Jason Todd into the chemicals. I did not care for the end of that fight at all. The second fight was by far my favorite of the fights, where when they choose the round, it goes back to the actual rematch. It is Joker and Jason Todd as they were during Death in the Family. And it's the fight in that warehouse. The one thing I didn't like about that is the idea that he held back fighting Joker because he didn't want to disappoint Bruce. And I just don't see that for that character in that moment. After Joker kills his mother, I don't see him holding back for any reason, even Bruce. And then the final fight I thought was another good one. It was a future Jason Todd that is more secure in himself versus a Joker in the Red Hood costume. But again, it gets to the ending, and I did not care for the ending of that one.
Yeah. That was my biggest problem, Wayne, was the ending of the third fight.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I have no desire to read any more KO things. This was the fight I wanted to see, and two out of three of them really disappointed me. One of them I enjoyed, but again, I had issues even with it. It was not the fights I wanted to see.
No, I was disappointed that the older and wiser Jason Todd did not take steps before he climbed out of that grave. I mean, he had time to make sure Joker was not going to come back, I think. But Paul, what did you think? You've been quiet.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with all your points. I mean, I enjoyed the book. On the flip side, you know, I will say I would have been, I don't know that it would have rung true to me if Jason Todd actually came out on top in this book. I don't feel like, I feel like one of them, maybe it's just because I'm not the biggest Jason Todd fan, but I feel like in no way would Jason Todd have actually come out on top after this round. Like I think he's just so consumed by anger. He's just, you know, he's never going to be enough to defeat the Joker. And I guess that was kind of the point of the book, right? So I think the way it wrapped up, that even though it was a bit silly that the Joker basically had a, you know, a thing that restarted his heart.
Defibrillator.
You know, he had a defibrillator
going on there.
Yeah. You know, even though that was a little silly, like, you know, I guess it's a way for Jason to have won, but not really. So, I mean, I overall, I enjoyed the book. To your point, Wayne, I think my favorite part, even though, and I understand why they did it, but my favorite part was the middle part where, you know, round two, where it's a revisit of what happened in the warehouse where Jason Todd died. You know, I understand why they did it. I don't ever feel like Jason Todd would have revisited that moment in that costume by choice.
I agree.
But, you know, I understand, you know, story-wise, why they did it. But I enjoyed it, you know, overall. I thought it ended the way it was going to. And I like that, you know, now we've wrapped up. Booster Gold's possessed by Doomsday. By Darkseid. And Earth has now converted into New Apocalypse. And now we're heading into DC KO number 3. I will say overall, because now we're, you know, we had these 8 all fight month books, I enjoyed it. I didn't read every single one of them, but overall I thought it was a fun lot of books. I liked the 3-round aspect of all of them, because I feel like it allowed us to get a bunch of different costumes, a bunch of different iterations of the character. We got to see that basically the fights, you know, all end one way or the other, you know, with each character winning at least once. So I thought this was a well-executed month of books overall. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's next.
It's very much our March Madness, right? You know how when we talk about our hypothetical face-offs, we always talk about, where's it located? Which version of the hero or villain are we facing? And so doing the 3 rounds allowed the writers to kind of explore different matchups and different locations and how that might affect the outcome. But yeah, we're down to the Elite 8, you know, and I don't know how, what form the third round is going to take, but, you know, in theory, it's going to be Superman, Guy Gardner, Aquaman, Lex Luthor, Wonder Woman, Cyborg, and the Joker versus Zatanna. God, I hope Zatanna wins.
So I looked up the results of the fight month, and apparently one of the fights was just 2 fights. Aquaman was 2-0 against Hawkman.
Well, that is the only fight month book I have not read, because everywhere around here sold out of it, and so that is.
I did not read that one either. Okay, of course, the one we didn't read. No, I will say. To your point, Wayne, I wish each book had ended with the bracket, you know, in the same way that Exquisite Corpses ends with a bracket, because that would have been cool to keep track of, you know, leading it. So that way we would know the Elite 8 without having to look it up online.
But the bracket is at the back of round 8.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
It's in the back of round 8 physically. Yep. It's not in the back of the digital edition.
Oh, yeah. I had no idea who even was in the other fights, because it's not in here. That's why I went and looked it up real quick.
Yeah. So as I recall, the bracket has not been in the other issues. But at the end of round 8, it has the from the very first round to now, and then has the setup for the, you know, little bracket for the rest of the fights on it. So, yeah. So I guess that you digital folks missed out.
Yeah. Guys, before we move into our last book, just because we're talking about the difference between print and physical, like I mentioned, I am in Virginia this week. I went to a comic store.
What?
I did it.
Good for you.
I broke down. I went to a comic store because I really wanted to read those two Deadpool Batman books, right? So there's a Deadpool Batman and a Batman Deadpool. And I really wanted to read them. So I went to a local comic shop and was reminded why I don't go to comic shops anymore, because I went in, I asked the dude, you know, if they had the books in stock. They only had one of them. They only had Batman Deadpool. They did not have the Deadpool Batman. It was in a random place, not in alphabetical order. It was in like a little, you know, like display in the back corner of the room that we had to walk around boxes and disorganization to get to. I mean, don't get me wrong. I got the book. Ultimately, I got one of them. So, it's frustrating. And like one, because you have to deal with stock, much like Andrew mentioned, not being able to get the Aquaman book. So you had to deal with stock, and they didn't have one of the two books that I was looking to get. And it was in a weird place. And now you have
a physical book you have to put somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's like, do you want a store bag? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And they're a very nice guy. You know, I'm not being kind. I'm not going to name the place, but you know, he put the comic in a bag and board for me, even though I didn't ask, which is nice. You know, didn't charge me for it, just put it in a bag and board. And then he's like, do you want a bag to carry it? And I'm like, yeah, you know, this isn't my only errand today. He put it in a Foot Lion bag. That's always something that kind of bugs me with comic shops. You don't need a personalized bag. You don't need to spend that kind of money, but like little paper bags or something like that, you know, like saving up your grocery store bags to hand out to your customers is just, you know, lacks a certain professionalism for me. Sure. So, you know, it was just, you know, again, there are comic shops like that. And then there's the extreme other end, you know, the nice fancy comic shops, but it was just, it was a comic shop experience that kind of reminds me why I don't often go into comic shops.
Yeah. Yep. I will say for these crossovers, I wasn't particularly interested in Batman Deadpool as a crossover, but I would have bought it if it would have come out digital same day. Because 100%. It hasn't, I am, at this point, I'm boycotting the book. When it comes out digital, I am not buying it because they didn't release it same day. And I am sure there will be other crossovers I absolutely want. But if they don't release it digitally at the same time, I'm boycotting them. I refuse to give them my money.
You know, here's the thing. I can give it a week or two, right, for comic stores to get the maximum sales. I get why you want to support local comic stores. That's why this podcast even exists. However, it's been 2 months. So I think, you know, they're still selling out printings. So I think that's part of it, is that, you know, they don't need to release digitally because it's still selling out in comic stores, but it was kind of frustrating that it's still not available. And that's what broke me. I'm like, okay, I really want to read this stupid book.
I do not want a physical copy. The only things I want physical copies of are like trades and collector's books. I don't want physical floppies of individual books. And so if they're not going to give me the book in my preferred reading format, I'm not going to support them when they get around to doing it.
Well, I was in Iowa for New Comic Book Day this year, so I had the opposite experience of Paul. I went to Mayhem Collectibles in Clive, Iowa, and it's a game store / comic book store, and it is beautiful. It's clean. It's well organized. There's no clutter. There's helpful staff that came around a couple times asking people if they need help finding things, because these were not on my pull at my home store. So they had all three issues. It's a much bigger store than my home store here where I live. But even so, I was there about 20 minutes after they opened Wednesday morning. When I walked in, they had about 10 copies of Red Hood versus the Joker. And by the time I, you know, finished looking through the game store side and left, they were down to about one issue of Red Hood and the Joker still on the wall. So a stock is definitely an issue for physical comic books.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what we should do before we wrap up is we should probably end on a feel good book.
Oh, yeah. Perhaps
the most feel good book of the week. You know, it's the holiday season. We're all feeling positive. And so to continue the good vibes, we all picked up on that. Three of us picked up Event Horizon Dark Descent.
So this is obviously the prequel. For those not familiar, this is the prequel to the Event Horizon movie, which was, what, late 90s?
Somewhere around there, like 97, 98, yeah.
Yeah. So I have thoughts about it, but I'm curious to hear what Aaron thinks about it first.
You know, I love the book, and love might be a strong word. I'm not sure I can use the word enjoy. I appreciate the book. It is definitely a vibe. It is, you know, extremely horrific. It leans into the just, you know, awfulness that, you know, we got to see in Event Horizon. I will say that I have a frustration with this book, it's a similar frustration that I had in the movie. And it's that there at no point is there ever an opportunity for them to do anything related to the mission, because things go off the wheels from the minute go, right? So that's part of the horror, is that, you know, your life's work is just dashed on these, you know, rocks of hell. I appreciate the design of the book. I appreciate the storytelling. It is really hard to say that that I'm enjoying the book, but I dig it in a weird, morbid sort of way. And you know how it's going to turn out, because nothing turns out well in the Event Horizon universe, I believe. But I'm on for the ride, as it, you know, regardless.
Well, I'm kind of in a similar boat. You know, the movie, there was a lot of psychological horror in the movie, whereas the book, pretty much you get real quick into just physical body horror type stuff and the gore. And I will say, I think so far my favorite part of the book is kind of the point before it launches, where you learn more about the designer of the gravity drive and the crazy influence. You know, after his wife dies, she comes back to talk to him in his dreams. That's been my favorite part of the book. The gore is at this point is maybe a little too much for me. So, like you, I'm not really enjoying it, but it is interesting. Paul, as our resident horror guru, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think I have similar feelings to Aaron. It is this issue more so than the others is. This is the darkest issue. This is the, you know, for anyone who's familiar with the Event Horizon movie, this is the blood orgy issue. You know, I found it very hard to read. I appreciated the art style in that you don't quite get a clear view of some of the horrible things that are happening in the shadows, because they are very, very horrible. I think much like Aaron, the one thing about certain horror that, you know, I don't like when the horror is when there is no hope of our protagonists getting out, right? Like, I'm okay with horror movies that end on a sad note, right? Where everyone dies, or they don't succeed and the bad guys win. I'm okay with that. That's a horror thing, but. To your point, from the word go, there was no hope that it's ever going to turn around. And again, this is a prequel, so we do know how it ends, but, like, you know, sometimes prequels can still have the characters get out and just be, you know, lost in space elsewhere. But, like, at no point does it seem like there's any way out for our characters. So you have to go in with a certain mindset that not only is it dark, it is hopeless, nonstop. It is gory nonstop. It is non-redeeming at any point. And so it is a specific kind of horror, and I understand that's the point of Event Horizon. But it's a lot. You know, it is not a book that you're gonna leave like putting it down like, oh, this is great. It's a book that you're gonna want to put down and then read like Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. You know, you'll need a palate cleanser to feel good about yourself, because it is not a feel good book in any way, shape, or form. But that's all bad words to say. I still like appreciated the book. I'm still in for the story to see where it goes. But whew, it is a dark one.
It is hard for me to imagine the situation where I'm going to want to reread this book.
Right. Agreed. You know, it reminds me very much of the conversation we've had over the years about horror and comics and how challenging it is to do. Right. To make something horrific and suspenseful and, you know, compelling all at the same time. And I think that our storytellers here in Event Horizon are just really leaning into the visual gore and making it unsettling, because there's not as much emphasis on some of the other sorts of elements that are just, you know, super creepy and you know, psychological in nature. And I take this opportunity to make a recommendation that I made a couple of years ago, The Red Mother by Jeremy Hahn and Danny Lukert. It is a perennial read for me. I love that entire series. And it very much does what I feel like this comic is trying to do. It truly transcends the medium, and it, you know, is creepy and evocative and scary, you know, without being gratuitous. There's just some haunting images that Danny Lukert produces, and that, you know, Jeremy Hahn scripts. It is a fantastic book, and I really strongly recommend it. So, are we all still in for the next issue of Event Horizon?
I am. Yeah, I'm going to finish it off. I think it's 6 issues, I think we said, so I'll finish it off.
I think you're right. Yeah, same.
Yeah, same.
Well, Paul?
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week is, not only is it a fifth week, it's New Year's Eve. So even though we had a big week from DC this past week for Christmas Eve, Marvel has a couple of big releases. Next week, nothing really from DC, but from Marvel, we get the conclusion of the Age of Revelation, you know, that giant X-Men crossover that none of us are reading. we get the start of Ultimate Endgame, which is the conclusion of the Ultimate Universe, the most recent iteration of the Ultimate Universe. So we're getting the conclusion of that starting next week in Ultimate Endgame, issue 105. And we get the new Sorcerer Supreme, you know, in that Dr. Doom is no longer the Sorcerer Supreme after One World Under Doom. And the torch has passed to Wanda Maximoff. And so the new Sorcerer Supreme book starts next week featuring Wanda Maximoff as the character. So those are the three big releases from Marvel this coming week.
Well, I'm just happy that after you know, a crazy megalomaniac like Doom being Sorcerer, now we have someone who's just very mentally stable and well-balanced with Wanda taking it over.
Yeah, no, that's going to end well, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nothing can go wrong.
And, nope. Right. Yeah. Huh. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought, what you got under the tree, what you thought about this week's books. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted valuable Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Well, good deal. Hey, everybody, don't forget the funny books right around the corner with the new year. Give us a shout. Let us know what your favorite reads are. Let us know what your favorite comic book cover was. The whole schmear. Let us know all the things. Again, ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. Guys, have a happy new year.
Happy new year
as well. Bye, guys.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.